Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? Or in today's case, whose fault is it that you're queer? Whose fault is it that you're pan? Whose fault is it that you're bi? Before this interview, I was talking to Marsha about, like, what do we feel about this question? And she was like, you can ask me any and all. And so stay tuned for which one I chose. If you do hear construction in the background, it's because the world is crashing around me. And okay, I'm not joking. I was literally just recording this intro, and then I got a message from Danny Pellegrino about the new Cinderella that's coming out. Billy Porter is the fairy godmother. Camilla Cabello. I'm fully 80 years old. And Danny was saying that the trailer looks, you know, interesting, but he saw a screener and it's really good. So take it from Danny Pellegrino, the new Cinderella, hopefully will be really cute. And come on, it's Idina Menzel, Pierce Brosnan, Billy Porter. Unfortunately, James Corden does play a small role. Jesus, when will he leave us alone? It's like when you're walking home from dinner and someone's behind you and you know they're not actually dangerous, but there's a foreboding feeling that they could be the reason why you die. That for me is James Corden. I will say that, speaking of Danny Pellegrino, it was so fucking nuts having him on the podcast last week. And I want to thank everyone who signed up for the Patreon. There are so many people that sent me nice messages about it and got to hear the bonus lightning round with him. And of course, the full video episode is unedited up there for Danny and Marsha Belsky as well. So get on that Patreon. Come on now. The Patreon is a legend. She is an icon. She is the moment. For today's episode, we have my soul sister, Marsha Belsky. Yes, doing this episode was the first time I ever met her. And yes, when we were talking, it felt like I've known her my entire life. It's just that kind of episode. She is so real and vulnerable. And of course, we have a lot of laughs, but a lot of real shit as well. I mean, talking about dating, relationships, our relationship to religion, musical theater. Speaking of theater and music, she is a stand-up comedian that has not only written for like the New York Times and Reductress, she also has a stand-up special on Comedy Central where she sings one of my favorite songs of all time called 100 Tampons.
Remember when NASA sent a woman to space for only 6 days and they gave her 100 tampons, 100 tampons.
She's also written full-length musical parodies called Handmaid's Tale the Musical. She wrote Fiddler on the Rooftop Bar, which we talk about in the episode a bit. So make sure you stick around for all of that. You've also heard her on podcasts like Las Culturistas. She's been on NPR's Marketplace, Radiolab. I mean, Marsha is the real deal and an absolute pleasure on this episode. So give us a 5-star review if you haven't. It really helps with the podcast. And of course, subscribe, follow along, and enjoy Marsha Belsky. When I get to like prepare for these interviews and just like pore over people's videos, yours was a true pledge, because I need you to know something, that like comedy, of course, is my jam. Musical theater is my jam. And Marsha Belsky, you are my jam. And I'm so happy you're on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, truly.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, I've really just combined those things within the last like 4 or 5 years, though, where like I was a musical theater kid and then I just did stand up for a really long time. I thought I just wanted to do stand up. And then I got into this musical comedy like within the last 5 years, and it's really clicked.
Yes. Well, I actually think that's really interesting because a lot of people I find like musical theater is like the starter drug. And then some people are like, oh, I don't, this is not it for me. But then they like go to something else. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait
yes,
a minute.
It's a
like,
gateway drug.
It's a gateway drug. And then also like, oh, wait a minute. Listening to Wicked all those years did mean something. And now I'm like going back home, if you know what I mean, to Oz, really.
Totally. Yeah, especially I feel like, I mean, this happened a little bit before quarantine, but especially in lockdown, I feel like a lot of us kind of return to like our inner child, like what makes us happy without these exterior sort yes. of influences.
That's actually so spot on because I found that like, I don't want to speak to anyone else's experience, but I was like in so dark of a place that I was like, I just need to do anything that makes me happy and that's fun. And then through that misery, it was like that remembering of what mm-hmm. it is actually that like doesn't make us feel like just like miserable.
Exactly. We're like really self-soothing, but this time we're like adults, hopefully capable of doing that.
Truly. I also want to tell you that right before we started this recording, I was also self-soothing by watching chiropractor videos and I'm really feeling zen right now. I just like love to hear a crack and I can't explain it.
It's like, I like those until there are some that are just too scary. Like there was this one where it was like this older woman and it was literally like her whole neck popped out of place and then went back in. And I'm like, it was oddly satisfying, but it truly looked like she broke her neck for a second. I'm like, I don't know how these guys do it. Wait, do you want to know something weird about chiropractors? And listen, no offense to any chiropractors listening, because this is fully just a rumor that I heard on TikTok.
Wait, if you're about to yuck my yum about chiropractors, I'm going to be devastated. Don't whatever you say, is it going to ruin chiropractors for me forever?
It won't, because it's only like you'll know if they're a bad one, but like okay. Apparently a huge amount of chiropractors in America at least are COVID deniers. Isn't that crazy?
I did not think you were going there.
It's weird. Like there's like these videos on TikTok where there's like a bunch of people in chiropractor offices of like signs that say like no mask, no problem, like COVID isn't real, like crazy things. And then people were speculating that it's because like chiropractor, and this is the part that I don't know if it's true, but apparently like chiropractors, like it's technically a pseudoscience, like where they like don't actually know how much that cracking and stuff helps you in the long run. I don't know. I don't know the details about why they're COVID deniers, but apparently there is a decent amount of chiropractors enough to remark upon who are COVID. Maybe it's because they seem like you're going into a doctor's office. So it'd be like strange that they're COVID.
Exactly.
Deniers,
but, well, it's kind of like yeah. when you see a pharmacist smoking, you're like, don't you know? I mean, also it's like, I think that chiropractors seems like there's a very wide range of the ones that are quite clinical and medical and the ones that are just like, I just like hearing bones crack. But also I think that every day I live on this earth, I find a new subspecies of humans that deny COVID. I feel like
I know.
Like, I was talking to Carrie O'Donnell
about that. I mean,
there are
nurses that deny COVID. Right. It's crazy. Yeah.
It's but really dark.
I mean, everyone, this is like, people are commenting on it. Like, I mean, first of all, please, like nurses who have worked this year are like the most amazing. Like, I commend them. I really do. But it is funny because they're like, you know, kind of seen as like nurses and doctors because they do such important work. But they are still people. And we all know that like the meanest girls in our high school became nurses. And like, but there's one girl I know who's so nice, like my friend who's a nurse, but she smokes cigarettes. She's like, people always like judge me because obviously I'm a nurse. She's like, I obviously know it's bad for me, but don't people drink and know it's bad for them? Like, she's like, sometimes we're just humans. We do shit.
Right.
Like,
and nurses and doctors have trauma too, babe. We all have fucked up childhoods, no matter if you're helping people or not. But when you said that chiropractor is like something that scared you, I immediately thought of the old woman video. And so I feel like we're already on the same page there, because if it's the same one that I'm thinking of, there's a video of her. She's like very old. And I think this is a chiropractor that I really trust. I mean, when I watch him, I'm like, these people are in good hands. But then every time she got adjusted, she went,
yeah, that was also like her reaction, like where you're like, oh,
and then
he goes,
are you okay? Is that feel good? She's like, yeah. It's like always like, it sounds like she did just see the light and just barely walked through.
Came
it.
Back to earth, yeah.
And then she came back. She's like, yeah, okay. It's like, but then it is really satisfying. One time I did share a chiropractor like supercut on my Instagram story that was just so satisfying because it was every deep crack like within a millisecond of each other edited.
My God.
Edited.
Some people hate it. Some people hate the cracks.
I got enough hate messages within about 7 to 8 minutes that I immediately deleted it.
It triggers people. It really does. Because apparently even like cracking your knuckles, some people find that like, one time I would just like cracked my knuckles in public and it like, I could tell it like really disturbed the guy next to me because we were like at a coffee shop and I felt bad because I had never thought about that as like something that could, but for me, it's the, I hate, and I respect people who are into it, but I hate when my friends will share the like Dr. Pimple Popper stuff because like, I'm so not into it and it like so grosses me out. But for some people, it's like ASMR. Like,
wait, are they sharing it via text or are they posting it?
No, just like randomly, like people will post it like on Insta, not like a lot. And it's like, you know, share whatever, like you can't really control what's going to like set people off. But I just, I'm so not into it. And a lot of my friends love it.
The pimple popper I find is even more polarizing than chiropractory.
It's true. We're in a polarized culture, you know?
Literally. It's one side or another. The other one that I would post or would really love is the, they call it the Y strap. It's where they put the strap around their chin. They're laying on their back and they like pull their head out of the socket. And you can, and apparently the crack goes from the top of their head down to their ass. Ugh. And I really, really want it. But a friend of mine, once we were talking about it, he's like, I heard that there's such bad nerve damage when they do that, and like that is not good for you. And the second he told me that, I was, every time it happens, I'm like, it looks so delicious, but
oh my god,
it's just fully not good for these people.
I know, that's the thing. I think it's like there's limit, like, but now it's weird too because now I have cracks in my body that I know aren't good. Like I'm like getting older, so it's like every time I move, my like knees crack, and like it's just, so I think that apparently the cracking is more about like hydration or like something, I don't know, but those look so good, but I could see it causing nerve damage because like it's all connected. It's like get your cracks in yoga, you know what I mean? Like just do a little stretches. I love when I get a good back crack.
There's nothing like a good back crack. Sometimes Matt will bend down to pick something up and you will hear a crack in his lower back or like his upper hip, and I'm always just like yeah, daddy.
I haven't gotten a good crack in a while now that I'm thinking about it. I feel like when I was a kid, I used to crack my neck all the time. And then now I don't really do it.
And which is probably good. I've heard the self neck cracking is a
not good.
Slippery slope, as they say.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
I will say, like, speaking of youth, one of your favorite songs of one of the songs that I perform that you love, one of the songs that you perform that I love is the one that is about everyone should be my exact same age. Like,
yes,
please,
no younger, no older. Because it's both. It's like, just everyone have the exact same experience as me, please. So that we can just like, because, you know, my mom would always tell me, like, whenever I would get like jealous of people or whatever, she'd be like, a world where everybody is the same would be really boring, which of course is true. But then I just thought it'd be funny, like somebody who's like, actually, I would love that. Actually, if everybody could just be me.
I need everyone to be Virgo, like moon in Libra and no older than 31.
Yeah, because it's like, I know it's ridiculous, but that's kind of like the raw emotion when somebody bothers you because they're like, you know, coming at things from a different point of view or they're a different age or like whatever, that you're like kind of just frustrated that they're not you, which is like,
I think it also becomes really shocking when you realize that you're in a different generation from someone when you're older than them and their experience and you're no longer the like in the know.
Oh my gosh. That's been happening to me. And I, you know, I always knew it would because I was definitely, and I think this makes sense too. I was, when I was young, I hung out with like way older people, like inappropriately older people. Like I partied with people from like my grocery store job and like stuff like that. And they would always be like, it's so funny because when I was your age, like all my friends were older, but now you're so young and stuff like that. And I'd be like, that's not going to happen to me. But of course, like when you pretend to be older, when you're an adolescent, you're going to kind of go through an adolescence when you're older. And I think comedy especially kind of keeps you like youthful in that way. And also, to be honest, like, again, my mother, very wise woman, she like always advised to always have friends who are like younger than you, especially when you get older, because like, I mean, my mom is like a really blunt, like brutal woman. And she's like, your friends are going to die. You want people who are like younger than you, who are like still going to be alive. And I'm like, I guess that's a good point. But in general, you know, probably just good to have older and younger friends. But I was hanging out with my
your experience and your knowledge.
Exactly. And I was like, but I will forget, because like I have this one really good friend, and we were I had never seen High School Musical because, like, you know, it kind of came out, like, I think it might have come out when I was like in high school or college, but I was kind of over my like Disney phase. And so we're watching it and I go, yeah, I never really watched this because this was like after my time. And she goes, oh, I mean, this came out when I was in fourth grade. So I watched it and I was like, oh, and I had like forgotten about our age difference. Like it was only our age difference is only like 6 years, but it's like when you're looking back on those cultural moments,
there's a huge.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I didn't watch Hannah Montana. Like that was all after me. That was after my middle school. Like,
did you end up watching High School Musical?
Yes, I did.
So because my younger brother is like 5-ish years younger than me, that's how I like knew that The Suite Life of Zack and Cody was a thing. He would watch The Fairly Odd Parents, which I loved. I definitely watched High School Musical just because I'm like a huge fag. But like the High School Musical, I would repeat Zac Efron's the song Bet on It.
It's so good
and it's so angsty, and I think it really spoke to my angst at that.
The choreography, they really fucked him over, like, because whenever there's a character they're trying to code as straight in a mm-hmm. musical, like if you watch Newsies, the choreography is always like punch, kick, yep. run, like they're like, we need you to dance but it can't be gay, like
don't be gay.
Exactly. Like, and also, you know, the controversy, which I didn't know, is that in the first movie, it's not Zac Efron singing. They brought somebody in. So all of Zac Efron's part, even though he is a singer, Zac Efron's parts in the first movie are sung by somebody else, which you can hear. It sounds like the guy singing sounds kind of like he'd be in like A-Teens or like some sort of like pop. And then, but Zac Efron was so like annoyed and embarrassed by that by the time he had become a celebrity for the second movie, he like insisted that they let him sing. So then the second and third movie, I guess, like is actually his voice. But the whole first movie, every other cast member is singing their parts, I'm pretty sure, except for Zac Efron. It was something about like they wanted it to be more poppy. Like they just didn't like his voice for some reason. And so they brought somebody else in.
Oh, that's dark. And then all of a sudden he's like, hey, babe, I'm famous now. So listen, not, I'm going to give you some vibrato. I mean, like, not that Zac Efron's like giving full light in the piazza, but like whatever. Like, I'm sure like he has a great voice. And like, I sometimes get surprised when people are that good looking and they also have like ability and talent. I'm like, who gave you the right? Like, God, exactly. Universe, whatever. Like, I sometimes can't believe, like, really specific reference, but Cheyenne Jackson, to me, he is so stunningly beautiful. And then to hear his voice, like talking about musical theater stuff, I would listen to the cast recording of Xanadu, and his voice in that show is like unbelievable. And he also looks like a quarterback in high school that also could be in Young and the Restless.
Musical theater like demands it of you, I guess, honestly. Well, men and women, honestly, like, because that's one of my reasons, like when I was younger, like now, like, you know, it's like I'm beautiful and I have a good singing voice, but like compared to what you need to be for musical theater, I knew it was never going to happen for me. Like they're like, even as a kid, they're like, okay, the beautiful blonde girl is going to get the lead. Marsha, I don't know, you could be like a witch. What, like, it's like, they're always like casting me as a witch.
Your choice, like, Marsha, do you want witch? Do you want mom? Or do you want...
Yes, like those thin, especially thin beauty standards and like those type of standards start so young in musical theater.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like I am impressed when people are like talented and have like good looks, but it almost like bums me out because I know that it's like demanded of them in a way. Like,
well, it's also that the industry or whatever, or even just the art form of it all, will only accept those types in certain roles.
Exactly. Think of all the talented fat people that have never gotten leads except for when they're playing like Tracy Turnblad, and that's a white character too. So it's like,
exactly. And I think that, not to get too jaded and personal and bitchy about it, but like that's one of the biggest reasons why I even stopped pursuing that world, because it just was not, the vibes of it all were just not it. It was like,
it's so toxic.
It's really
they're abusive
toxic
too, because they'll either say it behind your back in a mean way, or they'll say it to your face. It's like the Chorus Line song, Dance 10 Looks 3. Like they still say shit like that. And also, especially with gay guys, like, it's like most men in musical theater are gay, but there is such an anti-femme, like it's like you cannot be femme and play like a lead male role. And that's why even in musical theater, guys will like stay closeted because they know they can't make that transition to like lead Hollywood unless they're like so believably masked that like, you know, whatever. So it's
or
like,
they will force themselves or train themselves to be as masked as possible in order to get those roles. I mean,
totally.
And I think the really tough thing about this whole conversation, because I really think it's spot on, but the devastating part about it is that theater still is such a huge love of mine and such a like incredible experience to witness and to be a part of. And that's the whole reason why I think so many people, like we were even saying that so many people, it's the gateway drug and there is that innate beauty and magic to it. But then also, as we're saying, there's so much bullshit that's been pumped into it that it's like, it's just very hard to believe that there's going to be enough of a systemic change that will strip away the sizeism, blatant, like having to be super masculine, having to be super thin, like all of it. And also, of course, people of color only being relegated to certain roles as well. And I really hope that it does have that change. And I think what's going to end up happening for you and me, Marsha, is that we're going to end up doing High School Musical 5 together, get famous enough from
absolutely.
That, and then we'll go do our Broadway show.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, I definitely think the standards won't change that much and definitely not fast enough. But I love musical theater so much. It's like one of the few things, like I knew that I deeply, deeply loved it because when a show is bad, good, or in the middle, I love it. Like, it's like, I just love watching musical theater. Every like thing that's, I watch Cats 3 times in theaters. Like, I love all of it. I love when it's camp. I love when it's beautiful. I love when it's bad. Like, I love all of it. But I think you have to critique what you love. Like, that's the only way that you can advance it. And I do think there are, what my hope is, because we've seen this in comedy a little bit, because there's still obviously like centralized, very like standard cultures and practices. Mm-hmm. But with the internet, with people being able to kind of blow up their own talent, build their own audiences, I think you're slowly seeing a lessening of power amongst gatekeepers. And gatekeepers are really the ones who make those decisions for audiences. Because when you put a Black show in front of an audience, when you put any sort of show that's not the standard, that's of a marginalized group or like has a non-traditional lead, audiences actually love it because those groups are so underrepresented that, you know, they're really craving like, I mean, not like, you know, like maybe they don't want like, it told from like the non-marginalized, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, they don't want like white playwrights making like Black shows and things like that. But it's like, when you actually give people the platform or when they give themselves the platform, the audiences are there. So I think it's like gatekeepers telling audiences what they want, but now audiences and creators have power to kind of cut them out, like cut out the middlemen and just get their stuff in front of people. That's like kind of what we did is like, we did this like Handmaid's Tale musical parody. We did this like Fiddler on the Rooftop Bar musical parody. And we just did it like at Union Hall and then eventually like took it other places. It's like when you can kind of get yourself off the ground, I feel like that's why these gatekeepers are so like anxious and frustrated right now, because they can feel their power slipping.
Yes. But it's also, I think, why a lot of us talk about the dark side of the TikTok and the Instagram, like the constant, just the pressures of always seeing other people's success. The really positive side of it is that the power of the gatekeepers is lessening because of giving people the freedom to experiment with their creativity and create as mm-hmm. many things as they can. And I think that what I have learned in the past few years, just like you've combined kind of comedy and music, is I'm learning that even if you're putting something out that isn't perfect or whatever, it is still going to resonate with someone and then get you to the next thing you're making. And you get way more of a benefit from creating your own things out of that sense of fun and what you want to make. And then inevitably it will lead to very good things career-wise,
yes.
because it's coming from a real place.
And that's what audiences want. And that's what like studios and big producers and things keep missing. It's like, if you'll notice, like the most meaningful projects, whether it's comedy shows, musicals, come from like, basically, I guess the word is like auteur, where it's like, there's a creator mm-hmm. who really gets to have kind of free reign, who they collaborate with, what show they want to make. And there's not, you know, all these people like take this out, change this. Like, obviously there's going to be some of that, but you get the really good stuff, like Nathan For You, like, you know, things like that, when you just give somebody control over their own project. But people in Hollywood, Broadway work so hard because it's like their jobs depend on basically not letting a creator just have full control. But then you'll see all of these projects. That's when you see these projects where it's like, I truly think they don't understand. Like, we got the best director in the world. We cast all the best actors, but there's no natural chemistry. There's no excitement. There's no creativity. So they don't understand why these TV shows and projects keep failing when it's not coming from that original place of, I made this and now I want to make this, you know? So,
and listen, we say a lot about Lin-Manuel Miranda because he is sometimes insufferable, but he does create things from such a organic, real place. And like In the Heights, the movie, I really loved it. I, of course, like, as we say, anything you love,
it's the same thing. The criticisms are valid. Both can be true. Yeah.
But also, I saw that show on Broadway and it was pure magic. I mean,
I've seen the bootleg, not to tell on myself, but I do love these YouTube bootlegs. Well, that's the thing too, is we have to be careful too, like, as white people, because what I saw a lot with In the Heights criticism, the In the Heights criticism is absolutely valid in terms of the anti-blackness and how Hollywood kind of took out even some of the storylines that were black, and the criticisms of Lin-Manuel is like, you know, coming from people like of marginalized groups critiquing that basically they want Hispanic people to look Italian, whereas the real like Latin diaspora is much different than that. But then I'll see other white people and there's like, you know, like being like, ugh, I'm not going to see In the Heights because I don't know if you read this criticism because blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's not why you're not seeing it. You weren't going to see it. So don't use the criticisms of people who are trying to like call in and build, like, you know, I just think it's like, I think we kind of poke our noses where we don't belong sometimes when we should just be ingesting the criticism, reading it, seeing mm-hmm. what's valid, but also know that the conversation is not about us. Like, it's like about within the Latinx community, yeah, about how their like colorism and things like that work in those communities. Like, so I hate when I see like white people disregarding In the Heights, somehow like acting as though it's in solidarity with that. And it's like, you know, I just think both can be true. Like, both yes. are always true, kind of.
Truly. And also I find that, you know, what you were talking about with creating of your own things from your specific experience, like, we have to let those creators of In the Heights and those shows lead that conversation. But I also want to bring up that Fiddler on the Roof that you were talking about, the Fiddler on the Rooftop bar. It is so, I mean, A of all, Larry Owens has such an incredible voice. It's so fucking funny. I saw that, gosh, so many amazing people were in that. But the Judaism of it all, as another musical theater I want to tell you something that's just so fresh on top of mind, is that as many, I think, Jewish people right now have a complicated relationship with religion and any religious person in general, but like an organized religion. I really, as an adult, have embraced the cultural aspects, the traditions that feel just meaningful of like connection. But of course, a lot mm-hmm. of like the strict religious things I kind of feel against. But all this being said, I have very complicated feelings about the Bris of it all. But my twin brother had a baby like 8 days ago, and the Bris was last night, and they're in St. Louis, and I'm, you know, in New York, and I was watching it over Zoom.
Did you zoom in?
I zoomed into that circumcision, babe.
I love that.
But like, and the thing is, this was not my first Zoom Bris rodeo. But I like was watching it, and I, you know, of course, had the same feelings I always had, which is like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's like a little barbaric, it's a little brutal,
or
circumcising a child on camera. But then the reality hit me of, A, like, this is a thousands-year-old tradition, fine. But then the real reality is that my twin brother is a father, and I started to get a little teary during it all. And then my brother spoke, and, you know, very, very short. It's like, and you know, things
were so emotional. Support.
And I swear to God, Marcia, I got off. Sorry, I swear to God, G-D. I got off of that Zoom call, and probably also because I'm incredibly exhausted and like it's been a crazy time, but I didn't cry. I like full body wept 30 minutes.
But that makes sense. Like, I mean, I like cried at my friend's wedding and I did not expect to. Like, I just big emotional moments like that. It's so good to let yourself feel them. And I think, like, especially this year, like, that's kind of what the Bris ritual is about. Like, that's why I like Jewish rituals. I think rituals are important to people. I think that unfortunately, because institutionalized religion is so like corrupt and toxic, that people are missing kind of these like rituals and institutions that are helpful for us.
Yeah.
But it is funny too, because like there is a big movement against circumcision. And they're like, that's always like a thing that like men do to be like, oh yeah, are you a feminist? Well, what about circumcision? It's like, if you want to be against circumcision, I'm against it. I think men should have as much feeling in their dick as they can, like as long as they keep it clean, whatever. Like, I don't care that much. And then I saw like a Jewish woman talking about how like she's trying to change like just the standard that like Jewish men automatically get circumcised, because it is like a little barbaric and just something that people like do without considering it. But that being said, I was at my like nephew's bris, and I'll never forget, because he's strapped in, because obviously all these things now have like, he's strapped into this like thing they have to keep the baby still, because the bris is done like at the synagogue. It's not done like at a hospital. And they swear to God, the like the contraption that like hooked in the baby was called like Brismeister 2000, like or something. And I was thinking about this manufacturer, like who's like selling these like these like bris holders. Like,
wait, it's this is what I'm envisioning.
So funny.
Sharks. You know when you're
you're sharks.
Sharks.
I'm here to pitch to you. You know
how many times are you at a Brit Mila?
But the ritual is important. So I think it totally makes sense. Cause it is, it's like, it hit me too. It's like, oh my God, my brother's dad. Like,
yeah.
Cause you only go to a bris if you're super, super close. Like if you're very in the family or like very, very close. So
I think
like,
circumcision is really kind of like a very high standard for closeness to witness that. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, when the baby was born, I got to FaceTime in and like, say, you know, meet him via my phone and say, can mazel tov to him and his beautiful wife who did such an incredible job. And it was just like, it really was beautiful. And I was like, I can't believe it. And then for whatever reason, the bris was just like the true reality moment of seeing other people in the room, seeing my grandfather hold the baby, my dad hold the baby. And it just, you know, and him.
Oh, and,
then
and you haven't been able to go too. That's probably some of the emotion too. It's like,
Marsh, I think that was a whole lot of it. Cause I just like, you know, I really love living in New York, and I get to see my family a fair amount. I wish I could see them more, but it's not like I'm going every 3 years. Like I go at least probably a couple times a year. But it was a very big reality shock of just like, wow, I really, even if I want to be there right now, I truly cannot.
Yeah.
And
that's what was scary about the pandemic. Like those of us kind of like living away from our families is because our normal, like, oh, I'll see them twice a year was like taken from us. And it was, especially at the beginning, it was really scary of like, when am I going to be able to safely see my parents again? And like, you know, it's just, it's horrible.
Yeah, it is. But I do have a plan to visit in like a month or so. And so I just, Matt was like just hugging me as I cried and cried. And he just like, you know, kept saying like, there's going to be so many other celebratory moments. And, you know, we are going to see him, we're get to hold him soon. And, you know, and that's all we can do. And I think it is sort of the result of following our dreams and our passions and our, and creating a community and a tribe that is in a different place than where you grew up. And it's like, it's, you know, it's so worth it to do that. But of course it's also,
it's hard. Yeah.
Negate the toughness of it all.
Mm-hmm. I know. I keep thinking about that too, where it's like, and I'm lucky that my parents are not like the type that like wanted me to stay home and are sad that I live in New York. Like I grew up in Oklahoma and my mom was literally like, get the fuck out of here. Like, do not stay here. Like, and they ended up moving to Ohio, like right when I graduated. But like, it's
wait,
like,
I'm so interested in this. So, cause like Jew, I, as a Jew growing up in Missouri, people like there are Jews in Missouri and I'm like, you'd be surprised. There's a lot.
Yeah.
What part of Oklahoma?
I'm from Tulsa, and there's like a small but mighty Jewish community, because basically there's probably like 500,000, 800,000 people in like the whole metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And there's like, I think 3,000 Jews. So it's like there, you know, we had a youth group and we always like would go down to like Dallas, because that was like the regional BBYO youth group area.
Of course.
But it is funny because like I have never been in a serious relationship with a Jewish person. Because I think it's different than when you grow up like somewhere where there's like tons of Jews, or like most of the people you're around are maybe Jewish, because like all the people I knew, like there are a couple of people I had a crush on, but it was like, you know, it just felt too incestuous. Like, it's like, we've all known each other for like a long ass time. And you'd smooch boys at summer camp. That's my parents always sent me to Jewish summer camp, I think, as a way to like get me around like more Jewish people, and kind of got into like the rituals and stuff there. And a lot of people, you start to realize too, all of these like setups are just trying to make like Jews like marry other Jews. But I don't know if that's in the cards for me. I mean, I wouldn't count somebody out, obviously. But it's like, I wasn't
raised,
you're
not anti-Semitic. Like,
I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm like, but I always thought that being a self-hating Jew was just kind of like a joke, that we all are kind of that way or whatever. And then I worked at this, my 2 day jobs ago, I was working at a nonprofit and with a lot of Jewish people, and they were like actually religiously Jewish, like grew up in New York, like kind of Orthodox communities, not Hasidic, which is, there's a big divide there, but like, they're Orthodox. So it's like, you know, they're all going to get married. They're all going to have kids. You know, it's still very much in that line. And I made some joke about, you know, typical Jews, anxious, neurotic parents. And this girl I work with was like, what do you mean? I was like, you know how we as Jews are like neurotic. And she's like, what? Like, she was like kind of offended. I think because also she sees me, she wasn't really offended. I mean, we were fine. But like, I think because also there's the divide, like I'm a secular Jew who's somewhat spiritual and religious, but I'm not actually living the everyday like reality of like a Jewish person and Jewish community. So I think Jews who are living in that reality, I think like have a different like culture. I mean, like they're not sitting there like making fun of themselves the way that like Hollywood Jews do, so to speak. Like,
well, they're
who go for Rosh Hashanah.
I think it's like the quote unquote neurotic, anxious parents of it all, which of course is a real thing to them. That's just like that's just the normal standard, what their community is. But then when you're like, that's like when you're like, you're all neurotic and anxious, it's like, what are you talking about? This is just normal. And then you go to like, of course, like a Catholic mommy group, and it's just a different vibe. And like, one's not better than the other. And as much as I, like you're saying, like make the jokes and like the self-hate and all that, like I of course love being Jewish. Why the fuck do you think I talk about it so fucking much? Like, it, like there is so much love and passion behind it, but I just think that also we have a lot of baked in trauma, babe. And if we can't laugh about it, then I just like, what's the other option? Just like,
we have so much intergenerational trauma. Like, as I'm like dealing with my anxiety, like it's really wild because I'm just like sitting there like, yeah, this is shit my dad never dealt with. And now I'm dealing with it. Like, and it's like, I mean, it's there, but it is interesting because I never thought, because I am like, you know, 100% Jewish, both my parents are Jewish, but my dad is kind of the more Jewish mom. And my mom was kind of raised agnostic and like became more Jewish, like when she met my dad. And so like, I would always make these jokes, especially like coming from Oklahoma. I think you just learn to like put that like front and center about yourself. Like, I'm Jewish, I'm in front of it, you're not going to say anything to me, I've got the jokes first, like things like that. But then I was doing this interview and this guy was like, do you ever think of these sort of like self-hating, like, you know, Jewish tropes, like that you'll remark on sometimes, like as sort of perpetuating those harmful stereotypes? And I was like, well, now I am. Now I am thinking about that. So it's like, you know, I always try and look at what jokes I'm making in terms of like, is this something I'm doing to be like self-deprecating, or even as like an in joke amongst like other Jews? Or it's like, you know, people I feel like feel close enough to like Jews that I feel like they can laugh at our humor. I mean, our humor has been really dominant in American culture, like, you know, with Yiddish vaudeville and then like our influence in Hollywood. This is where I get frustrated too, like where I saw somebody talking about this, like, there are Jewish people, like, of course it is like kind of insane that like there are major Jewish roles like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Maisel, like not played by Jews, like sure. But I think that white Jews, we will sometimes try and latch onto this conversation about representation in Hollywood with those like couple of examples. And it's like, but white Jews can play white people.
Yeah.
And we are white people. And so it's like, that's not our conversation. Like, it's like, we are represented. I grew up with tons of stories. Like, we're not represented. I remember like, you know, Rugrats, Hanukkah and Passover as like one of the only things that had like actual, like talking about the religion itself and those type of things. So of course Christmas and Christianity is very dominant, but in terms of that representation of our culture, we're there, we're fine. Like, we're we're good.
We need more Jews in Hollywood.
I know. It's like, literally, we're fine. Like, so it's, you know, I find it funny. Like, so I think for that reason, people feel they can really relate to Jewish humor, right, because it's been so dominant in comedy, to the point that I did this like audition for this festival, I won't say. And apparently the guy after my set turns to the woman, like the judge, who has now been exposed for other problematic things, was like, great, another Jew girl. Like, it's like, so it's like, how are you going to be in comedy mad at Jewish girls? But like, there's so many of us, I guess it's hack. So it's like, you know.
Oh my God, Jew girls are hack now? Great. That includes
Great.
Well, listen, speaking of like all of our backgrounds, our traumas, our roots, I want to ask the famous podcast question.
Yes, please.
Marsha Belsky, whose fault is it that you're queer? Whose fault is it that you're pan? Whose fault is it that you're bi?
All
and I
three, baby.
I want to state that, Marsha, we did have this discussion, and I think that all three apply, and that's why I really just wanted to love asking all three. Marsha, whose fault is it? Who do you blame?
That's so interesting. I was trying to like think about this question. I didn't think about in terms of who do I blame, because I'm like, who do I blame? I mean,
it could be a what, it could be a where, it could be a, you know, it's really anything.
I was trying to look back on like moments like of queerness, like once I was like realizing that in myself, like moments that I might not have picked up on at the time. And there was this one that I was thinking of that's like the first movie I remember consciously being horny to was like this totally innocuous kiss at the end of the movie The Wedding Planner with Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Lopez. I was obsessed with that movie as a kid.
Marsha.
I watched it like 500 times. So I always thought, like, literally that kiss made me so horny. And I always thought it was because I was attracted to Matthew McConaughey. And looking back, I think I was extremely attracted to both of them.
Okay.
And that's
why. I can interrupt you. I just want to let you know that full circle, you are a witch. Because on last week's episode with the famous Danny Pellegrino, we had a full discussion about The Wedding Planner, where he, A, joked about how Jennifer Lopez, they had her play Italian. But
yes,
also how Matthew McConaughey is gorgeous in that movie. Danny also said he's wearing a ton of makeup. But all this being said, I really, part of me blames that movie for making me queer as well. So please continue. The kiss at the end, were you like really gravitated towards Jennifer? Is that what we're saying?
No, like I'm just realizing, looking back on that movie, it's because Matthew McConaughey is so attractive in that movie. It's the way that he wears sweaters. That yes. is like, because that's what I'm into with men. It's like, I love their hands. Mm. I love the way that they wear sweaters. I like chest hair and like things like that. And then with women, like what I didn't realize, because I wasn't like, because compulsory heterosexuality, I like only was thinking about that I was attracted to him. And he had this like sexy like Adam's apple in that movie that he's always swallowing and like really enunciating, like, and it's like really hot. But Jennifer Lopez is like, there was like a scene where it's just like her ass in jeans. And it's just like, I don't think I realized consciously at the time that I was like very attracted to her, but it's like, I mean, they're both so hot in that movie, and they're a hot couple, and like, she's so hot. Ugh. And I think looking back, I mean, it's like, and of course Jennifer Lopez is like the only type of curvy they would even allow, because she's like completely flat stomach and then has like a huge ass. But I do think that there was something in me that had only seen teeny, teeny, tiny emaciated girls as lovable on screen, and just seeing somebody with like a fat ass like be the one who was chosen over, yes, this like skinny blonde girl was like really important to me.
You know what? And that's actually really, I keep trying to think and unpack why that movie spoke to me so much. And I think that is right. It's like seeing someone that you have the conventional blonde skinny bitch that usually the person would go for, but Matthew McConaughey of all people wearing these gorgeous tight ass sweaters. I mean, Jesus H, I don't know if they're clamped in the back or what.
And it's the colors of the sweaters too. Like just like his complexion
like
with like
foam,
these like weird army green. Yes. Like it's just like, it's hot. And then he had the white shirt under the sweater. It's just men around me were not wearing sweaters like that. I mean, I wasn't seeing. And that's still what I'm so into. But the problem is, it's like anytime I see like a well-dressed guy like that, he's either like gay or he's like been married for like a very long time. It's like men who are like well-groomed are rarely like into women and single. Like, but sometimes, I mean, I pretty much only date men who are like queer or like somewhat like fluid. You know what I mean? So it's like, I like, now it's like, I like you know, sometimes I want to wear the sweater, you know what I mean? So it's
sure.
But I was so attracted to it.
So speaking of kind of just like conventional things and looking to the future with dating, do you envision yourself like being in a marriage situation? Do you have those visions, or do you keep it very open for what it looks like in your future?
I am not so into marriage, but I want a committed relationship. Like, you know, it's hard with like my career stuff because I didn't realize until recently kind of how much of like having a normal dating life I've sacrificed because I've been doing stand-up since I was 19. So it's like, I really haven't had normal dating experiences since then. And then before then I dated like much older guys, like in a way that was like kind of fucked up. So it's like, it's interesting because like, I was in a committed relationship like a few years ago and we broke up and we're still friends. But like, I realized like, I want a committed relationship, but it's like, it's hard to date because I'm like, everything that would make me attractive as a man makes me like scary as a woman kind of like, and that's super reductive. That's kind of like mostly because I fuck with men and I'm trying to like date women more and see if that kind of like changes. So like, but you know, it's just, it's difficult for me because I think it's like I meet a lot of people through comedy, but then there's obviously the difference between like who I am as a comedian and who I am as a person. So it's like, I definitely see myself in a committed relationship. I think I am a monogamist or whatever. Like it's like, if I'm casually, I can kind of casually sleep around and have friends with benefits if I really don't want to date them. And we have the chemistry, but we just don't want to date each other. Like that works for me. But lately it's been making me feel like more lonely. Cause it's like, what I'm missing is like that intimacy, that like commitment. Like, I don't know if I would like not get married if I found like a partner I really wanted that commitment with, but I'm just not like, the paperwork scares me, honestly, because my fear, I have super insecurities around somebody being with me, no longer wanting to be with me, but like not telling me. And then marriage makes that really hard because I feel like, you know, it's like people will stay in relationships for years that they're not happy in, just because it's so complicated to break up. And so I feel like marriage adds like another level to that, that would make me insecure.
Yeah, cause
like, I don't want the
higher
paperwork.
It's so
with the right person, I think you wouldn't have that doubt maybe. And so then I would be excited to commit, but I would definitely do like a town hall wedding. Like,
sure, sure. Well, I mean, if I'm being really real about it, I think that for me, I did think that Matt was going to leave me for, not in our marriage, but in the first like 3 years. No, I would say the first year to 2 years of dating, I would have these moments of spiraling that he was going to break up with me. And the funniest thing that happened is that, and I think a lot of it was kind of like a self-esteem thing because he is so beautiful. And like, I, you know, the first time I saw him, I was like, this guy is out of my league. He's gorgeous. He's like, there's no way, but he's looking at me like he's kind of into me. Like, why is he doing that?
I always have that. And it's like, we're hot, but it's like, I just think we weren't raised as that, as a part of our identity.
No,
so it's like,
no.
It still freaks me out when somebody I'm attracted to finds me attractive.
You're like, what's wrong with you, babe?
Kind of like, yeah.
Yeah. But then what ended up happening is that, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this, is that I had that fear for a long time, and then that fear went away. And then all of a sudden, like 2 to 3 years in, I was talking to my therapist, and all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, I'm fucking hot and he's not giving me what I need, and fuck this guy, he doesn't deserve this. And my therapist, I still remember, she was like, so what changed? Just happened? I was like, I have no idea, but I got to a point of like, we were having a moment in our relationship where I wasn't like, one of my needs wasn't being met, whatever it was. And it completely shifted the dynamic where I was like, actually, you're
you got to stand up. Yeah. It sounds to me, as someone who's like learned a lot about this for myself, that you had anxious attachment issues and then you moved into a more secure attachment to the point where you could stand up for your needs. And then that shifts the that's how I'm trying to change how I date, is because I've always approached it from a very like I couldn't stand up for my own needs because I was scared that they would leave.
Yes.
And now it's like, if you leave, then it wasn't the right situation. So I have to stand up for my own needs, but it's taken me a very long time to get there.
Listen, I totally identify with that. It's so tough to get there, but I really feel like it's important to remind yourself that A, the more real you are, the earlier, and B, the more transparent you are about your needs, then the deeper the relationship can be, the more likely it will be to succeed, because that other person is receiving you in the more real version of yourself. Because let's face it, you, of course, when you first date, you're like, I'm a perfect person and nothing is wrong.
Yeah, and it's not sustainable.
6 months later, you're like, I fucking hate myself so fucking much. It's like, exactly. it's a pretty
when people
turn.
Want you to be authentic. Like, that's what was hard for me, is like, I think I try and connect with people by having them open up to me, because then I don't have to be vulnerable, because then I really, really pick and choose what I want to show people and things like that. But it's like, you know, in my last few situations, I've been trying to just be open, because it's like, truly, you have nothing to lose except for like a connection that maybe wasn't meant to be, or yes. Like, you know, you just have to like let things happen how they're gonna happen. But it's like, it's really hard for me to stand up for my needs in that way, but it's the only way to feel seen, to actually see the other person, because I was putting people on pedestals and they didn't like that either, because nobody, and I don't like when, you know, people treat me that way, because it's like, you're not seeing me if you're only seeing this like person on a pedestal. So I think it was leaving my partners feeling very like unseen by me, because I'm just trying to please them and not sticking up for my own needs, but at the same time getting upset when they can't read my mind, being very insecure to the point that I can't open up, that I can't be vulnerable. These are the things I'm working on. I mean, it's hard, like, because I hate the talking and I hate the dating, but it's really necessary. So I'm really trying right now to just like go out on dates, like meet people without the expectation of a relationship, because I was always chasing dates with wanting to be in a relationship. And now just kind of realizing like relationships happen very naturally when there's a connection between people, and I'm intuitive, so I can feel that connection. So when I feel that connection, I just go with it. And if it doesn't work out, it's painful, but I'll be okay.
You know,
but it's taken me a long time.
It takes such a long time to know that. But I think what my therapist repeated to me, that I want to repeat to anyone who's listening, that anytime you're feeling this, especially with dating, is like the three words, four words. The four words are, let it be organic. If it's meant to be, or if it's meant to be whatever the fuck it's meant to be, it's going to be that. And so I would get in the way of many things because of my anxiety and all those things. But really, like, I think one of the biggest reasons that Matt and I ended up staying together is because I have like literal photo proof of me texting friends and saying to people, he is so cute. He's so great. But I have no idea if this is going to go anywhere, because especially the Judaism of it all, I was at a point where I was like, I don't know, a year out of birthright. And I was like, well, I guess I have to be with a Jew. I have to continue spreading my seed. Of course, like myth with a man, I actually can't. But like, I was with Matt and I was like, I mean, he's like a blue-eyed Catholic boy from the South. Like, I didn't necessarily envision this as a long-term partner. So like, I'm just going to really enjoy this and boo, 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 boo. And then of course, 2 years in, I was like, my needs aren't being met. Fuck you.
Yeah.
And then of course, my needs were them met. And then 3 years in, I was like, are we doing okay? We need to really check in.
Yep,
and then we like
gotta check
in. And then of course, 5 years into dating, that's when we got engaged, and then we got married at six, and it was just like, it organically happened that way.
And I think that was my issue. I couldn't let things happen. I'm really bad at just letting things happen, because my anxiety wants to control the narrative. I was very afraid of feeling foolish, looking foolish, and it's like, I've really kind of let that go in a way, because it's just like, because that also came from a belief, like, I through therapy have worked through this feeling of like, I really would conflate one person's opinion of me with the entire world's opinion of me, which makes dating really hard, because, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work, but like, you get rejected in these small and big ways, but it's really not about you. It's about the connection, and it's about it, you know? And so it's like, I had a really hard time just kind of letting things unfold, because also there's a tricky balance there between sticking up for your needs and letting things unfold organically. And that's been a tough balance, but I'm feeling like I'm starting to get there. But then it's hard, because it's like, then you really like somebody and it's like all these old issues like up and you're
listen,
don't leave me.
There are such growing pains with it. And I also find it so important to remind yourself that when you are having a low moment with that person, whether you're dating in a long relationship, the anxiety in me used to say that, oh, this means that we are bad. We're not meant to be together. We should break up. And that's actually like what I'm excited about, because Matt and I have a segment for the Patreon for bonus episodes called This Week's Fight, where we like unpack the fight. And I think that it's actually like, it's good for both of us because we get to kind of laugh at the things we're fighting about, but also acknowledge that we have issues like everyone else does, but it is okay and frankly necessary to address them and then move forward knowing you're going to be okay, versus when I would be like, oh no, we fought about insert dumb thing here, we definitely are going to break up. So, but
listen. Well, and that's also with the other person being like, because that's one thing that I've learned too, is that all these relationships I would look back on being like, why didn't they work out? It's because I was the only one willing. I was the only one who wanted to be in the relationship. The other person liked me. They were attracted to me, but they just, anytime it would come. So that's why I'd always keep my needs silent, because when you bring up your needs, those people do leave because they don't really want to be with you. They can't, they're not ready, whatever it is. So it's like, you know, it's taken me a really long time to not take that personally, that just like, not everybody is willing, because if you have a fight and you work through it, it's because both of you want to be in the relationship.
Ooh,
that's the main thing. Like,
that is it.
And that's my fear with marriage, is that my fear is always the other person doesn't want to be in the relationship with me, but isn't telling me. And because like, especially with men, like they, I don't know. My friend was saying that sometimes they think it's because straight men are taught to like infantilize women, where it's like, they always think like you're so like precious and fragile to the point that they make an issue way worse than it has to be, because it's way more painful for me to be guessing if you're into me or not than for you just to go, hey, I think you're really great, but it's just not a good time in my life right now, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so that's caused a big insecurity for me, because I'll date people who are nice people. But then part of that is that they like are nice to a fault, where they don't want to just say difficult things sometimes. You know?
I get that. But I think what my dream for you is to give yourself enough credit to know that you will feel it innately, and that you are such an emotionally intelligent person that regardless of what you think is happening, your gut is going to know if they're feeling any sort of way. And
my gut always instantly knows. And sometimes it's brutal, because I'm like, wait, no.
Right. And also it's like straight men are just,
I gotta trust it.
You do. And straight men can be really bad communicators, but like you still, we all have those guts. And listen,
and maybe I won't end up with a man, and that would be, you know, different. So that'd be nice.
Exactly. And listen, whatever happens, it's going to be organic and it's going to be beautiful.
It's going to be organic. Exactly. That's like part of like leaning into the fluidity of my sexuality too, is that it just allows me to go for things organically. Like I really just connect with people that I connect with, and I don't want any limitations on that, you know? So it's like, it's taken a long time, but baby, she's getting there.
She's getting there. She is on her way. I want to, before we log off, I want to ask the final question, which is controversial. Marsha Belsky, what do you think is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Well, it's funny because actually the first Broadway show I ever saw was a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum starring Whoopi Goldberg, who had just taken over for, I believe, Nathan Lane.
Oh my God, Marsha, so that is huge.
Yes. And my dad, we listened to her like books on tape when we were like on car rides and stuff. So it's like, I've always been such a Whoopi Goldberg fan. And the story of how she got her stage name is so funny, because she's like, people call me Whoopi because I like, I don't know if it's like she farted a lot or she would like make a joke about farting a lot. And so it was like, they call her Whoopi Cushion. And so that's where she got Whoopi. And then she literally was like, and Goldberg, because I felt like it would help me to have a Jewish last name. I'm just like, I love that so much. I love her. She's so funny. But okay, what are my favorite? Okay, well, as a kid, Little Rascals. I loved Little Rascals.
What is her son's name in that movie? Like Pickle or?
Yeah, something like that. So cute. And then, I mean, Sister Act, obviously.
Obvious.
Maybe. But also one that I just rewatched recently that she's amazing in, Cinderella.
Marsha,
Brandy, yes. Brandy, and Whitney Houston, Cinderella.
Whitney, Brandy, Cinderella is canon.
Yes. Yes. So those are probably my three: Sister Act, Little Rascals, and Cinderella are, you know, Whoopi Goldberg movies that I
and
that
then
I love.
Honestly, throwing in a Color Purple. Happened on the way to the Forum Broadway moment is very
exactly.
And that's on Broadway. Well, Marcia Belsky, I just need to let you know, I felt this like spiritual connection with you. This is like such a pleasure of an episode.
Me too, babe.
And I really, really, really appreciate you coming on. And honestly, I think we're going to have a reunion episode at some point. And thank you so much for being on That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marcia Belsky, my new soulmate. I just can't not get over her. If you want to follow her on social media, her handle is at Marcia Sky, Marcia SKY. And please follow along on the Patreon to get that bonus exclusive content. This week's fight with Matt is going to be up there in the next week. And also get the full video and access to merch. So that is linked in the show notes, and follow the podcast Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast, and follow me at Eric Wills, ERICWILLZ. Tell a friend if you liked this episode. Tag Marcia if you enjoyed it. I'm loving growing this gay ass community. And listen, I love ya. I need ya. I'll see you next week.
Class is now in session, and the UPS Store is here to help you ace arriving on campus. Our certified packing experts can pack everything you need, from desktops to decor. Plus, when you pack and ship with us, you get our exclusive pack and ship guarantee. Your items arrive safe or your money back. Restrictions and limitations apply. To get a 20% off packing coupon and for full details, visit theupsstore.com/packing.